I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thank you, Juan. Just afternoon. Welcome back. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan, kicking off the second half of our show. A couple hours to go with you today. Lay of the land at 12:18. Rewatched the Browns to this point in their season. We'll give you some thoughts and break down their offense and their defense this hour. We're also going to be making our picks with confidence points at 12:45 today. And at 1 o'clock, Ken Carman, who does radio in Cleveland on our sister station, will be with us to break down the matchup. But right now, as we kick off the blitz, let's go to the gridiron. J.P. Finley, NBC Sports Washington, joins us from Ashburn. J.P., is Morgan Moses going to play this weekend?
I certainly think so, Grant. He was out there today taking part in the very, very short portion of practice the media was able to watch. He was out there with the rest of the O-line. Morgan Moses is a gamer. He hasn't missed a start in years. He's got the longest active start streak on the team. I expect him to be out there Sunday at right tackle.
John Paul, you know who does miss starts or games is Sadiq Charles. I'll Seinfeld this thing. What's the deal with Sadiq Charles?
He hasn't even played yet. I don't know why he's not on the IR, honestly, Danny. I'd be shocked if he plays this week. He was on the bike when I left the practice field. I don't know. Ron said he had a setback with his thigh injury. I don't know. I've been watching every practice they've had since late July, and I don't believe I've ever seen him practice. So the hope that he could be your starting left tackle, I don't think you could see that until maybe even after the bye week, because even if he's able to come back, say, next week, he's going to need a few weeks just to get up to speed. And barring an injury or something, maybe they want to keep him as insurance in case Jared Christian gets hurt and they don't trust David Sharp or Cornelius Lucas. And there is some roster flexibility with the additional offensive linemen on the active roster. But to me, the experiment here isn't making a ton of sense when you could use that roster spot somewhere else.
Makes sense to me. All right, let's get to the wide receiver position. McLaurin, Gandy Golden, Inman, Sims. What's this going to look like in Week 17 if you hit fast forward?
Oh, that's a good question, Grant. Certainly McLaurin, he's the best player on the team. Maybe it's Chase Young, but Terry's right there. McLaurin's the root. I think if you had on that offense, he's the only player that would start on another team. I think he's the only player. Maybe Morgan Moses. I think beyond Terry, they like Steve Sims. There's a lot to like with Steve Sims. I think Sims, if he's your slot guy and kind of a third contributor, he could really help a team. I think back to when Washington had Deshaun and Pierre on the outside, how good Jamison Crowder was for them on the inside. I think Sims could thrive in a role like that, but I don't think physically or his game is built to be the number two guy. Right now they need him to be that. Dontrell Inman is Dontrell Inman. He's a seventh-year undrafted kind of journeyman wideout. I think there could be growth from Antonio Gandy-Golden. I just think that's going to take a while. You're talking about a kid from Liberty who had no offseason, no OTAs, and he missed a good chunk of training camp with a concussion. He's got to make up a lot of ground really fast.
Johan Pietrofinley. Matchup this weekend against Cleveland. They've done some smash mouth stuff, but I think they've got enough offensive diversity to beat you a bunch of different ways. Strong test for this defense, but to me it's about what Washington does in the first half on offense. They've got one touchdown drive that the defense handed them with a turnover. Other than that, it's a lot of punting. How do they match up this weekend against Cleveland?
Through two games, Danny, they've been outscored 37-7 in the first half. That is big trouble. They've got to get going early. Ron Rivera said that he thinks Dwayne is too excited early in games. I'm not sure that's really a thing, but it could be. I think they'd be really well served to get the ball to J.D. McKissic. Let Dwayne complete some easy passes to McKissic and Gibson out of the backfield, whether they're screens or just design pass plays, and they don't all need to be dump offs. McKissic's a gifted wide out. I mean, the guy played wide out in college. He's caught 30, 40 balls multiple times in the NFL. You can get him on a wheel route, matched up against a linebacker, and maybe go downfield a bit. The lack of downfield plays really hurt them in Arizona. Dwayne Haskins, I think, only completed two passes over 10 yards in that game. It'd be nice if they could get some chunk plays. Cleveland's defense is quite beatable, so you'd like them to be able to maybe create some matchups. And, Grant, I'm curious what you think. I mean, Dwayne keeps saying he's expecting to see zone coverages. Then these defenses just come out and, man, these defenses are basically asking Dwayne, hey, if you can beat us, beat us. If these wideouts can beat us, do it. But we don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and I don't know how much that's changing anytime soon. JP, thank you, buddy. Enjoy the day at the park.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
See you, bud.
All right, let's talk Washington football team with Nikki Javala of the Washington Post. The Blitz continues. Get some different insight from someone else who covers the club. Nikki, I want to start on the defensive side of the ball. First chance to really prove they can stop the run. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are coming downhill, and everybody knows it. How do we expect this front to hold up?
I mean, you hope that it holds up well. This is a group that, you know, they obviously have the best 1-2 rushing punch in the NFL with Chubb and Kareem Hunt. But, you know, this is going to be a real test, I think, for the defense, mainly because they're going to have to pick their poison, which is something that Ron has alluded to already this week. And, you know, they got two receivers who statistically haven't put up massive numbers, but are very capable of, making the DBs look silly. And that's one thing, again, that Ron noted is, yeah, while they have the run game, that opens up the floodgates for play action. And that's what they used against the Bengals. You know, Nick Chubb had a 13-yard gain. And next play, Mayfield rolls left and hits Odell Beckham with a 43-yard touchdown catch that he just put a double move on the corner. So their run game opens up other opportunities that, you know, is really going to test the corners too.
Speaking of the corners, if Kendall Fuller comes back, I'm not counting my chickens just yet, but let's assume that he does. How does that position shake out there with him, with Moreau, with Moreland, with Darby, et cetera, Nikki?
Yeah, it depends on what they come out with to start, if we're talking like true starter. Last game, I think they opened a nickel. So you had three corners out there. Week before, it was usually been Moreland in his place. But my best guess, without, you know, he certainly isn't going to tell us ahead of the game, is, you know, either they're a nickel and Moreland's the extra DB, or it's Kendall Fuller and Darby. And that's assuming he's full go and they're ready to, you know, let him go to the fullest. I mean, I don't know what their plan is for Fuller. If there's any concern about his knee and he's going against Odell, that could be tricky. Again, you go back to that one series against the Bengals where he put that double move on the corner. That's going to be hard if you have a bum knee.
Nikki, I try to ask short questions, but this is complicated. So I'm going to try to get this out here as best I can. People normally want transparency, and that's what they beg for, right? Ron Rivera seems to be being very transparent and saying, hey, I didn't call those timeouts. I don't want to get anyone hurt. Hey, it's going to take a while. Hey, we're in year one of a rebuild. And now it seems like people are being bothered. It's like people want people to talk about politics until they disagree with them, kind of. How have you understood the reaction, and what do you make of people seemingly, I guess, being frustrated with some of the things Rivera's done when he's screaming to anyone who will listen, this is not really about 2020 for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been around a number of other coaches who are not transparent, and it's incredibly frustrating. From my point of view, I say, hey, take it. This is great. You know, like, he's being honest as much as he can. Now, he's not going to go in depth about injury. He's not going to go into depth about strategy, especially before a game. But that's every coach in the NFL. And, yeah, Ron is more transparent than, you know, 99% of them in the league. He has a clear plan. And he said this from, you know, the day he was hired. It's going to take time. You know, what this team needs is not an overnight fix. That's not possible. You have to fix pretty much every position on the field, not to mention everything that's going on outside of football with this franchise. And it's going to take time. It's going to take multiple drafts to get to where they want. It's going to take multiple free agencies to get to where they want. So they're doing kind of what they did with Cam Newton. Granted, Cam Newton was a different kind of quarterback than Dwayne Haskins coming in. But they're taking a similar approach, and they want to build around him. My only concern now is I don't feel that Dwayne Haskins has enough to work with on offense while they're developing a lot of younger guys. And then you start to wonder, all right, well, you're developing, you know, a lot of the young defensive guys, a lot of the guys up front on the line. What about Haskins? Does he have enough to succeed and to develop himself? Because he's the most important piece of the puzzle, right?
Nikki, thank you. Great information. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
You do the same. Let's talk a little baseball, Tommy. We'll squeeze it in. GP, the final series of the year for these Washington Nationals. It's official. They're not going to the playoffs. What can we take out of these last three games with the New York Metropolitans?
Well, I just think they're going to be experimenting a little bit. You're looking ahead to the offseason. But how about this, Danny? Juan Soto in September in 20 games. On base at a 530 clip. You don't hear that.
That's
25
dumb.
Walks and 14 strikeouts, almost 2-1. I don't know that I've ever heard about that for a month. But 11 intentional walks. And while that's amazing, it's also alarming. It screams that this team needs someone protecting him.
That's right.
There was a game, I think it was last night. It might have been the night before. I'm picturing myself washing the dishes, hearing Bob Carpenter do the lineup. But Yan Gomes and Kurt Suzuki were batting third and fourth, respectively, or something like that. Like, they were back-to-back in the heart of the order, the two catchers. They need someone to protect Juan Soto, period. Now, you could say, well, of course they're going to go get someone, Grant. Why are you making a big deal about this? Because I was screaming it a year ago at this time, and they didn't go do it. Now, I think that they will. I think they'll go get Marcell Ozuna or Michael Brantley or, you know, somebody. But didn't we all see this coming? Didn't we all know that there was about to rain? It was dark. It was cloudy. It smelled like rain. It looked like rain. We just said, oh, it's not going to rain. They better get someone to protect Juan Soto next year.
Yeah, it wasn't as if Marcell Ozuna was available in some sort of free agency process this year, signed a one-year deal, and is putting up MVP caliber numbers. And it wasn't as if guys weren't available, but they said, no, we'll do this on the cheap. We'll go for Starlin Castro and hope that second half wasn't a fluke, and this is the new renaissance for him, a la Dave, you know, Daniel Murphy a couple years ago. Didn't work out both in terms of the hitter, then some injuries happened, and next thing you know, that's kind of the season. But man, oh man, is it certainly frustrating. Real quick, most disappointing National for you this year?
And Robles is in the conversation. Strasburg, just based on the injury not being available. I'll tell you one guy who quietly took a step back, pitched last night, Patrick Corbin.
Corbin.
I wouldn't say he was the most disappointing National, but his ERA was 4.6. He gave up 24 hits in his last two starts over 13 innings. And in fact, if you go back to a start before that, and he pitched deep into those starts because they needed him to, 7, 6, and 7 innings. But over those 20 innings to finish his season, he gave up 33 hits, 9, 14, and 10 hits. So I'm worried might be too strong, but it's very important that he has a good offseason and comes back with arm strength, because the trend was not great for him this year after getting to the World Series and being a hero last year.
Yeah, I kept bringing this up, but his velocity was down for a lot of this season. And some of that you go, okay, it's normal. These guys aren't up to speed. And just you didn't get spring training and you build up some of the strength. But it kind of kept happening. It kept happening. And his fastball became hittable. You could nominate Eric Thames in there too, a guy that they brought in to hit for some power and had that first base job locked down. 203 with three homers and an OPS of 617. Gross.
He's in the conversation for worst National. I have to have expected a lot for it to be disappointing. But I get what you're doing. Let's get into the Browns next. Went back and watched a couple of their games, jotted a bunch of notes down, so we'll open up the notebook on Cleveland on Grant and Danny on the Fan. At 12:45, we'll make our picks assign our confidence points for week three. Welcome back to Grant and Danny. Before we get into the Browns, some of the notes that jotted down while watching them the last couple of nights. I wanted to talk college football with you for just a second, Danny, because this is a big weekend in college football. The SEC is back tomorrow. SEC football kicking off. So that means that five of the country's top eight teams will be playing. Eight of the top 25 who hadn't been are playing now. Ranked teams in the SEC include number two Alabama, fourth-ranked Georgia, number five Florida, sixth-ranked LSU, the defending champions, number eight Auburn, 10th-ranked Texas A&M, and then Tennessee somehow is number 16, and Kentucky is number 23. They're going to allow fans in 13 of 14 of those schools, by the way, up to 25% capacity. In fact, I was reading today on Axios that LSU is going to admit 25,000 fans. Of course, their stadium capacity is 102,000, so it's about a quarter of their stadium. But their opener, so it's tomorrow, 25,000 fans. The average ticket for that game, $243, up 247% from week one last year after they won the championship.
People are so excited to go do it that, yeah, they'll do it. They'll pay whatever it costs, man. I am sympathetic to that. I mean, we're jumping through hoops just to find activities. Anybody that's allowing us to do stuff, we're doing it. So I get that, man. I get the demand being through the roof there.
If you want to know just how big of a difference it is for college football to have the SEC back this weekend, we had one game last weekend that featured two teams that were ranked playing each other, Miami and Louisville. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, we're going to get three of those types of games, but then a bunch of other marquee matchups. So you've got a noon kick on SEC Network of Kentucky and Auburn. That's 23-8. There's a noon kick between Louisville and Pittsburgh on ACC Network. That's 24-21. Not great football, but pretty solid. At 3:30, Mississippi State and LSU, the number six team in the country. That's on CBS. Tomorrow on Fox at 3:30 in the afternoon, they'll go head-to-head with Mississippi State and LSU with Texas Tech and number eight Texas. 3:30 kickoff on ESPN, number 22 Army and 14th-ranked Cincinnati. And then tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Alabama, number two team in the country, is at Missouri on ESPN. And at 7:30 on ABC, your nationally televised night game, Florida State, which has just fallen apart over the last couple of years, at number 12 Miami. Remember when that game used to mean something? Not anymore.
Oh, yeah. And it's on both fronts. I mean, Miami is okay this year, apparently, but Miami had gone into a giant trash heap while Florida State was in its own downward spiral. Florida State's a basketball school. I got news for you. They get first-round draft picks on the basketball team every year. They got another kid coming out this year that's going to be really good, in my humble opinion. So, yeah, it's weird to see. It's weird to see. We thought Bobby Bowden was one of those guys, you're grandfathered in, and you get to coach forever, but maybe the game has passed you by. I don't know, man. It hadn't been great since he left.
Leonard Hamilton's basketball program running that school. In this reporter's humble opinion, as he broke out there. All right, let's go to the Browns. So kind of did what I did last week with Arizona and just jotted things down as I watched them. So we'll start on their defense. Mm-hmm. They were at their worst, and it was not close this past week against the Bengals when they got spread out and picked on in nickel and dime. Not surprising, I don't think, because they're a lot like Washington. The strength of their defense is up front, and they've got one great player in their secondary, and otherwise they're not very good. But when Joe Burrow went empty gun and or, four wides or split out a tight end and had a back with him in the backfield, they did kind of what they wanted in the passing game against Cleveland. Up front, Myles Garrett is obviously a world eater. We know about Myles Garrett. His one sack this past week came from him actually rushing inside, so he kicked inside of the end, which was Porter Gustin on the play. And he came basically one-on-one with a right guard. This week, that right guard is going to be Wes Schweitzer. So get ready for that. That's how he got his sack this week. Sheldon Richardson, remember when he was great with the Jets?
Yeah. That wasn't that long ago, was it? Or am I crazy?
No, I think it was maybe 2-3 years ago, something like that. It was not long at all. He is still very good. Early sack on him reading a play-action boot perfectly. Like, he just stopped rushing uphill and said, oh, I've seen this play on film. And he just ran to a spot, and he beat Baker Mayfield to it and then threw him to the ground. It was a crazy play to watch. Really, really smart. Off the bench, Adrian Claiborne. He's pretty good. He's been a good starter in the NFL. He is, like Washington, they've got a deep rotation, kind of like Kerrigan, coming off the bench when guys wear down. And he had a sack rushing 4-5. They don't really let up. They're really, really good. There's a guy that I've never heard of before this week, and maybe that just is a me thing. I don't know. Do you know this guy, Porter Gustin, who wears 97 for them?
This is me giving you the I have no file face. I don't know Porter Gustin.
So there's an overused phrase where people say things like, oh, well, that guy jumps out at you when you quote-unquote watch the film. I'm not watching the film. I'm just rewatching the game. I mean, he jumps off the screen. He's in the backfield constantly. Look out for this dude, number 97. His name's Porter Gustin. He played at USC. Several passing downs and distances where they just sell out to get into the backfield to pass rush and blow things up, but they're really susceptible to play action because of that. There was a third and run, one where Burrow hit his tight end, Drew Sample, wide open in the flat. So I think you can have them maybe on a screen or something where, you know, they're trying to get to the quarterback, and maybe you can hit something short to a tight end with some running room. A couple other things real quick. Right corner Terrence Mitchell gives huge cushions. I counted twice where he gave a 10 or 11-yard cushion. Now, John Ross was often the guy that he was defending who's got great speed. But I would just have some type of sign. Like, Danny, why don't teams do this? Where Terry McLaurin and Dwayne Haskins sees that on Wednesday and says, hey, Terry, if he gives you an 11-yard cushion, I'm going to look over at you and tap the side of my helmet, and I'm going to just slip the ball out to you for the easiest 6 yards we've ever had. Like, why don't teams just do that?
I'm with you. I don't want to necessarily call it an automatic, but close to it, right? Where, you know, you see this in basketball all the time. If guys shade a screen a certain way, you just have an automatic counter to it or something like that, right? Or in baseball, some action could trigger an automatic pickoff. This is the kind of thing that I think should happen. And smart teams, as they grow and get comfortable, have those sorts of deals. I mean, think of Peyton Manning and his trillion signals at the line of scrimmage, right? Some of those were, if we see X, we're going to do Y. But I'm with you.
Linebacker group can be had by running backs. They've got a linebacker. I think his name is pronounced Takitaki. It's
Takitaki.
T-A-K-I-T-A-K-I. He got beaten like a drum by Joe Mixon one-on-one a couple of times. Antonio Gibson or J.D. McKissick, I don't care which, but they should be asked to run routes against that guy, and they'll beat him. And Joe Burrow only went to a hard count one time, and he drew them off sides pretty easily. So I'd like to see Dwayne Haskins do that a couple of times. So just some things I jotted down watching the game. Anything you'd add about a Browns defense? Again, a great group up front. Oh, I didn't write this down. But the player that had the best game on that defense, and he's unbelievable. Like, if he plays this well every week, he should be an all-pro, is Denzel Ward, the Ohio State cornerback.
Absolute stud.
Top five pick. Dude, he owned A.J. Green in that matchup this weekend. He was really, really good. He doesn't travel. So he's basically on the left side of their defense. He's their left cornerback every single down. So I would put Terry McLaurin on the other side of the formation constantly. Denzel Ward is great. So that's what I got on the Browns defense.
Through a couple of weeks, they've played what we think are one excellent offensive opponent, and Cincinnati really moved the ball against him as well, right? So that you kind of go, wait a minute, how truthful is this? Well, look at this. The Browns are sixth in the league in yards per play allowed on defense. Kind of stunning to me. They're better so far through 2 weeks than Pittsburgh, than San Francisco, than the Ravens, than New Orleans, teams that have been pretty good in that regard. I found that pretty surprising. Their hurry percentage, they are fourth in the league in hurry percentage and seventh in the league in quarterback pressure percentage. Again, that's despite getting run roughshod over in a couple of games with some offenses that moved the ball really well and scored a bunch of points against them. So it tells you that they're doing what they are designed to do, even against offenses that they give up points. I don't think this group can take advantage of the ability to move the football and give points. And it also tells you we should be scared to death of them being able to get after the quarterback, because they've done it against two pretty good offenses, one great offense, and then whatever Cincinnati is. But they're getting home. They're hitting the quarterback. They're knocking people down. They don't have the sack totals that Washington does. An 8-sack week will do that. But their pass rush has been very consistent.
On Denzel Ward, Dar says he's not practicing today. He left practice yesterday. So it's, you know, when you get to Friday and you're not practicing,
maybe he needs a week off. Maybe
sometimes you're in doubt to play. But I'll tell you, that would be a huge break for Dwayne Haskins, because he is one of the better corners in football. Next, the Browns offense. They can run the ball. You know that. We'll get you some of the particulars on how they've moved the ball over the first 2 weeks of the season. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Who will we assign our confidence points to in our picks this week? What are the standings looking like going into week three? We'll answer those questions at 12:45. Ken Carman does morning radio in Cleveland on our sister station, 92.3 The Fan. He will be with us coming up in 35 minutes at 1 o'clock. Let's get to the Browns offense. Went back, watched the games. jotted down some notes. We're going through some of those observations. So you know exactly what Kevin Stefanski wants to do and wants this offense to look like. Go back and watch Minnesota last year. What got him his head coaching job, Danny, and what he always gets praised for, maybe it's over-talked about, is how well he, the word that gets overused is marries, the run and the pass and play action.
That's right.
Their play action passes all look like runs. And that sounds dumb. That's the whole point, right? But a lot of teams, you can kind of tell. In fact, last year, one of the issues a lot of the people who evaluate the film for a living had it with Washington's play-action passing game is you could kind of tell before the snap or you know, based on some of the fakes and things, whether they were
these
actually
these aren't runs
it.
They call.
Right, exactly.
That's not in their playbook. Yeah.
But you saw this. This is what the Browns want to be. They had play-action bootlegs to get Baker Mayfield going in the game. First and second play of the game and the first play of the second half, which is always you go into the locker room, you get a couple of minutes to yourself to stare at your sheet. What am I not doing enough? What do I want to get back to? Very, very telling oftentimes the first couple plays of the second half, like the first couple plays of the game. Where do you think you can hit a team and hurt them? And so they want to move the pocket. They want to bootleg Baker Mayfield. They want to use his mobility and his athleticism. So expect a lot of that. He gets the ball out fast and makes really simple reads. I didn't see that many times. There were two or three plays where he made some real nice second or third option throws. But, Danny, it was a lot of, okay, this is this guy. As soon as he gets the ball, he's locked in on someone, and he's throwing it to that guy 2 seconds later. So that's good and bad. In fact, that led to one of his interceptions where he had to reset his feet and he got some rush in the pocket. It was his real bad decision of the game. So I actually think Baker Mayfield, not surprisingly, I guess, can be had as far as an interception or two. He's got the longest streak, 8 straight games in football with one, because he does lock on to receivers more than you'll traditionally see. Something that I picked up on, but that's part of why they want to move the pocket so much. It kind of splits the field in half of what he has to read. There's not a lot of, like, going to the third, fourth guy. It's just, okay, here's my first, here's my second guy. Which one am I throwing to?
This offense is, the numbers are really skewed badly because of their first week against Baltimore. And we're trying to figure out how great Baltimore's defense actually is and how much that was bad. Cleveland or, you know, no offseason or, you know, new coach, new everything. It's really, really hard to tell with these few data points. But
you
overall,
might find out after they play the Chiefs this weekend.
Well, yeah, you might be right. I mean, Cleveland's offense so far has been pretty uninspiring when you look at the total numbers. Now, they moved the football and scored a bunch of points against Cincinnati, did whatever the hell they wanted. But maybe the truth is somewhere in between. So right now, they're below average in yards per play, way below average, even below Washington in yards per pass attempt, although that's deceptive because Washington's made up all their yards in, you know, when they're down by 17 points or more in terms of moving the football. But Cleveland's offense is not a juggernaut yet. Maybe you get 4, 5, 6 more weeks with all these weapons not playing Baltimore or not playing Pittsburgh, and they'll show a little bit better. But this is a big test for Cleveland, and we're going to ask Ken Carman about this, I'm sure, when he comes on a little bit. But they played one really good defense, and then they played Cincinnati. This is maybe not as good as Baltimore overall, but Washington's defense is very competent. And that the front four, or really 5 or 6 that we talk about all the time, this is a test for them. They're thinking about this in that kind of way, going, what's for real about this Cleveland offense with all the pieces and parts, and what's Baker Mayfield going to be?
Yeah. A couple other things I want to get to here, Danny, on the offense, and we can kind of get closer to making our predictions today. But I want to address how good the Browns offensive line is playing. They have a really good line. For years, hasn't the opposite been what we said about them?
Yep.
But you can change this pretty quickly. And I guess the reason I bring this up is for Washington fans who are discouraged. They drafted Jedrick Wills in the first round. They spent $42 million on Jack Conklin, who didn't even play, by the way, in week two, who's really good. But on the interior, they've got Joel Bitonio at left guard, who pulls on a lot of their running plays and a lot of their power stuff and just blows people up. And they've got an awesome center. Like, how often do you watch a game and notice a center? You will notice J.C. Treader, who's the president of the Players Association. You probably know his name because he talked a lot during the period of time when they were putting together the COVID rules. He's great. They've got an outstanding line. So I can't wait to watch their line against Washington's pass rush. I think it's going to be really, really fun. Baker Mayfield scrambles a couple of times in week two. You will see that. Picked up 8 on a 3rd and 7, but he really doesn't want to. I thought he'd run more in the NFL than he has. He is almost kind of desperate to throw the ball and doesn't like leaving the pocket. I'd like to see him run a little bit more. Maybe not Joe Burrow style, but he's got that club in the bag. Let's see. They run behind a fullback a lot. You don't see this in the NFL that much anymore. They traded for a fullback. Think about that. Who trades for a fullback? A guy named Andy Janovich from he came from, I think, Denver, came from out west. So they run behind him, and if there's a coordinator that was going to do it, it was going to be your boy Kevin Stefanski, because think about the Vikings. They have C.J. Ham, who they throw the ball to out of the backfield and run behind with Dalvin Cook. But a lot of their running plays, when they just start coming downhill at you, are out of a power eye, Spike's favorite formation, or a split eye. That was a little Giants reference for you, Danny. But you will see a fullback, old school football. Darrell Young will be smiling somewhere. Willing blockers in the passing game. So I mentioned their play action is married well to their running game and passing game. One of the ways you can do that, so they had a really cool run design where they like brought Jarvis Landry in motion to stack behind two tight ends on the strength of the formation, and then they just basically ran right behind him as he was blowing people up. But then later in the game, the exact same look, they go play action, and Jarvis Landry, instead of blocking, runs a route, right? Splits the tight ends past the linebackers. Just a good example of kind of designing things to look the exact same. They wore the Bengals down. We'll see if they can wear Washington down. I wrote down this very important detailed note. Kareem Hunt is outstanding.
Very good.
I wrote that down. That should be very telling, very revealing. There's not a lot of misdirection or weird stuff here. You know, the Cardinals, you had to prepare for a million things and a bunch of looks that were wacky that you'd never seen before. That is not Stefanski. That is not the Browns. They're going to run the ball. They're going to go traditional play-action boots. They might have a jet sweep or two here or there, but there's nothing sexy about this offense.
Two kinds of quarterbacks get sacked a lot. Type number one are playmakers, guys that are keeping plays alive, dancing around. The Roethlisberger school of thought. Russell Wilson has always been sacked a ton. Nobody's sitting here criticizing Russell Wilson for that because, as I alluded to, he's going to hold on to the ball, move away from rushers and look to make plays, right? That's type number one. Type number two is quarterbacks that have bad seasons. Dwayne Haskins, Joe Flacco, Kyle Allen, right? Daniel Jones last year got sacked a bunch. Baker Mayfield got sacked a ton last year. 7% sack rate among qualified starters was one of the five worst in the NFL at that. Well, this year, that has been cut better than in half. Only a 3.1% dropback rate or sack rate on dropbacks. That speaks to the offensive line improvement. It speaks a little bit to Mayfield, but also some of the design, et cetera. A stark contrast. He's up there with Aaron Rodgers, with Drew Brees, with Pat Mahomes, and Ryan Tannehill through 3 weeks. They've been outstanding in that regard, GP, and that's kind of speaks to what you're talking about with the offensive line's dramatic improvement and maybe some design concept improvement. That's a big challenge for Washington this week.
And the running game. Like, they're so good at the passing game, but they're – I know that they have maybe the – they certainly have the best tandem, and they have two of maybe the top 10 running backs in football. But they just kicked the Bengals' butt in the running game. So it's going to be a really, really great test for that Washington defensive front. There's no doubt about that. The other thing I'd say, I think I mentioned this earlier in the show, I only saw Hunter Bryant one time. He caught a pass. That guy could – he was like running like a wide receiver. If you told me right now he caught 7 balls this week somehow for 82 yards, I would say, yeah, that makes sense to me. And that's kind of the list. One other thing, the two times they took deep shots were completely predictable downs and distances. And Stefanski might as well have just screamed to the other sideline. We're going deep here. First and 10 from the plus 43. They're running well. They got 7 in the box, and they go play action shot to Odell Beckham Jr. So I don't know that they're going to try to outsmart you. They're just going to try to out-execute you. But some thoughts on the Browns based on their first couple of games. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Who gets our confidence points? We make our picks for week 3 next. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Ken Carman does radio morning drive in Cleveland. Going to join us to talk Browns and Washington at the top of the hour at 1. It is time to assign our confidence points, our picks for this week. Let's go over the standings first, though, Danny. We are through 2 weeks at this point in the confidence points predictions. Our producers play with us as well. So here is your look at the standings at this point. Danny is in second place behind Thommy. Thommy's got 210. Danny's got 200. I've got 190 sitting in third. And Dar needs a big week. He's at 120. A couple of lengths off the pace right now. So Thommy, Danny, me, and Dar in that order going into week 3. The way this works, We get 5 games to pick. We get confidence points to dole out, 50, 40, 30, 20, and 10-point increments. And based on the points that you win, you add to your season total. So, Danny, start with your 50-point play of the weekend.
My 50-pointer, I don't know if there's a spread big enough right now for me to say that the New York Jets will cover it. So give me, even though it's 11.5 at home,
wow,
the Indianapolis Colts will cover. The Jets are terrible. They're a fire that's on fire that's filled with garbage. The Colts will cover the double-digit spread.
How about that? I actually considered, by the way, taking the Jets, not for 50 points, but in one of my picks. I'm not going to. It will not be pictured. My 50-point play, you just watched them. The Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray, -5.5 against the Detroit Lions. I think this line should be a little bit bigger. So I get it. You know, when you come on the road like Arizona is and you're playing in a different time zone, these spreads can look a little bit wacky. Oh, wait, it's in Arizona. What on earth is Vegas doing? -5.5. I feel like it should be 8 or 9. I will take that and run with it. The Cardinals are going to destroy the Lions this weekend. Nobody in football at the quarterback position better without having to deal with the blitz than Kyler Murray. And the Lions, traditionally over the last few years under Matt Patricia, are one of the least blitz-happy defenses there is. So I love the matchup for Arizona. Give me your 40-point play.
So this is where I start to not feel as good, because Vegas is good at this, right? Setting these things where you can either be, it could go either way. But I like this one a little bit more than some of the rest. New England, -5.5 over Vegas. I think people are going to overreact to how good Las Vegas looked this past week at home with some of the juice there, playing their first game at that stadium and how limited New Orleans was without Michael Thomas. I think people are going to overreact to Las Vegas. I think New England wins this game. They're not going to be 1-2, right? They're going to win by more than a touchdown. This defense is going to exercise some demons.
Interesting. I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Bucks -5.5. I'm going to ride the – you're playing against the backup quarterback wave this week. A couple of my picks will reflect that. Tampa Bay has not put it together yet, and I don't have a whole lot of confidence, frankly, in Tom Brady after the last 2 weeks. I don't love the way he's playing. But Denver – I know Driscoll looked okay in the second half. He had a week to prepare for him now. Going to a backup QB. No Cortland Sutton. They already had big problems on defense. Just not very healthy. I think they're about to go into the dumps for a few weeks. So I'm going to go with the Bucs to beat them by 6 or more. -5.5. They cover that. My 30-point play. I'll bet you don't have this one, Danny. Give me the Cincinnati Bengals +4.5 against the Philadelphia Eagles. Actually thought about making this a higher point play than this. I think the Bengals win this game outright. In fact, your boy might actually make a money line bet on this and a place to be named later. But you're going to give me +4.5. The Eagles' offensive line is a disaster. Joe Burrow's going to keep the Bengals in this game whether they win or lose. I could see them losing by a field goal, but if that's the case, then your boy's a big fat winner. So give me the Bengals +4.5.
My 30-pointer, you touched on it already, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going up against a backup quarterback. I don't fully trust Tampa Bay yet, but 5.5 points on the road, I know that's a pretty big number. It opened at -3.5. I just don't trust Denver to be able to make enough plays offensively. Though, again, they showed well in the second half against Pittsburgh, stayed in that game. I think Tampa goes on the road and wins that one by a touchdown. So that brings me to my 20-point game. I think this offense in Washington simply cannot do it, and I think that means that Washington will lose by more than 7 points on the road against the Cleveland Browns. I think Cleveland covers that 7-point spread. It's a big spread. It's probably too big, to be honest with you, but I think Cleveland ends up winning by double digits.
Yeah, I didn't want to touch it. If I had to, I might take Washington, honestly, but I'm not touching this game. For the 20-pointer, give me the Titans -2.5. They're playing the Vikings. I think a lot of people feel like Minnesota's going to have a gasp left because if you go 0-3, you miss the playoffs, and they're a better team than this. But I'm not sure that Danielle Hunter's playing, and I know that their secondary hasn't added personnel this week. In fact, it might be more banged up. So I don't know what's really changing. If they win, it's because Cousins is sharp and Thielen goes off and Dalvin Cook is able, based on game script, to get 24 carries for 151 yards or something like that. And I could see it. I just think that it's more likely that doesn't happen. So I'll throw 20 points on the Titans, the better team, -2.5. My 10-point play, the dog kennel is open, my friend. The dog kennel, you hear the barking off in the distance? The New York Football Giants +4 against the San Francisco 49ers and Nick Mullins. I see a field goal slop fest here, like a 16-13 type stinker. Give me the Giants +4 for 10 points.
Oh, I thought about putting that one on the board. I don't have a great feel for it.
So here's what I am going to go with to close this bad boy out. You already said it, so it's not as sexy. Tennessee Titans on the road against Minnesota. I think Minnesota is headed down the toilet. So I think Tennessee covers the 2.5 points that I'm seeing on the DraftKings Sportsbook. So I hate this look right here. I got five favorites in the confidence points pool, which never works. It never works. And yet here I am rolling with it.
Wow, how about that? So a recap for your boy. Cardinals -5.5, Bucks -5.5, Bengals +4.5, Titans -2.5, and the Giants +4.
I got the Colts -11.5, New England -5.5, Tampa Bay -5.5, Cleveland -7 over Washington, and Tennessee -2.5.
All right, I want to bring in Thami and Dar real quick. We're up against
the leader
for Ken Carmen. But I do want to get maybe you guys, I don't know what the best way to do this, maybe give us a game we didn't mention or your lock of the week, the game you feel best about, and you can break down here for a moment. Thami, why don't you go first? Give us a game that you love.
Well, you're kind of throwing a curveball at me here. I had all five. I mean, you mentioned a lot of the games. My 50-point play is the Giants +4.
You love the Giants this week.
Yeah, I do. I really do.
The injuries, Mullins, what are you seeing here?
There are two running backs that are hurt. Kittle is a game-time decision. Nick Mullins stinks. I mean, there's a ton of reasons why. The Giants will cover +4. It's my 50-point play.
Wow. Thami is putting all his chips on New York. Dar, you have had a disastrous couple of weeks. You got to get creative here. What are you going to do?
So I wanted to pick against you guys and hope that that turns the tide, but that could just be disastrous.
It could be even worse.
Yeah. So I got the Pats as my 50-point play. I got Tennessee 2.5 as my 40-point play. Dallas +5 is my 30-point play. Green Bay +3 is my 20. And Baltimore -3.5 is my 10.
You're the only person. Dom, did you bet on the Ravens-Chiefs game at all? Or are you throwing that in there or no?
It's not in my confidence point, but I bet the board, so I will have action on it. I just haven't decided it yet. It's not a confidence play.
Yeah, I couldn't touch that one.
Do you want all five of mine?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, Giants +450, 40-point. New England -5.5, 30 points. Philadelphia -4 against Cincinnati, 20 points. Chicago +3.5. My 10-point play is Dallas +5.
So we're going head-to-head on that Bengals-Eagles game. Ooh. So there you go. We put these out, and I'll tweet them on Sunday morning for everyone to follow throughout the day because I know it's just a lot of numbers being thrown at you. But we will have them all available for you on game day. So there you go, our confidence points picks. Thami, 10 points in the lead right now. Grant and Danny radio program confidence points all season long. Next, Ken Carmen joins us from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland right here on TV.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.